goodness, Patrick. Let me tell you about the glory that is Tournament of Champions. I mean, you're a basketball fan, right? Did you get into March Madness?
Yeah, you know, I filled out brackets.
Okay. So, like, the best part of brackets is, like, arguing with people about who should be, like, seated in one spot or another, right? Like, that's my favorite part. Yeah. And so, Tournament of Champions starts by bringing together 16 chefs. And
I like
then
that.
In every battle, there's this thing called the randomizer. And this is the thing that, like, destroys everyone's lives. Because you spin wheels to determine your meat, your produce, a piece of equipment you have to have, a style in which you have to cook, and the amount of time that you have. So you get, like, these ridiculous combinations where you have to take, like, I don't know, pigeon and bok choy, and you have to cook it in a waffle iron in a Southern Italian style in 20 minutes, right? Like, you get just nuts stuff like that. But you never have any idea what's coming, and it's very exciting. Yeah.
That does sound exciting. I would watch that. This is Food Network, right?
This is Food Network, yeah.
All right, well, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast.
We're
exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
Good. How
Excellent.
Are you?
I'm
this
good.
This lovely, as of recording, a lovely Thursday morning.
It is a lovely Thursday
morning. A brisk Thursday morning. It's chilly outside.
I'm loving this. It's like actual springtime as opposed to being 110 degrees already. So
yeah, Texas likes to drive through some seasons pretty fast, except for summer. Right. Take it nice and slow during that one.
Ease
so
on
this
down.
Is nice.
Yeah.
And it'll be 70s this afternoon, which will be lovely.
Yeah.
Great to go for a walk with my son, which we do almost every afternoon.
I'm digging your Zoom background today. You've got quite the academic appearance of books on your shelves and whatnot.
Yes,
it's looking very good.
For our listeners, I am in what I'm calling my home office, which is actually, we have a little front room with a bookshelf and I have a bunch of books on there. It reality is baby storage area. So in this front office, I see two car seats, a plaything, there's a stroller, we got a kiddie pool in here.
Ooh.
It's basically, and I'm in a corner.
Indoor kiddie pool, I like it.
Well, it's stored in here, so.
Whatever, man. Just put some water in there, and then your kid is living the life. He's got an indoor
pool.
Yeah,
too chilly to go swimming right now, so it's stored.
That's why you're doing it indoors. This is.
Okay, ooh, yeah, I like it. All right, so I've got some news for us.
Okay.
All right, are you tired of the same old Zoom meeting that you've been having?
We're on a Zoom meeting right now.
Are
you going to be offended if I say yes?
No, I'm not. I'm kind of tired of them, too. All right, but you can now pay $65 to have a llama join your Zoom meeting.
Excellent. What what benefits do I get from this llama joining my Zoom meeting?
Basically, you have another, you know, imagine us right now. We have two windows open here, two screens.
Uh-huh.
Imagine a third screen, and it's just at a farm, and there's a llama there.
I love it.
Hanging out.
So here's my recommendation, because we haven't gone live on our Facebook page for a while, but you can go live through a Zoom meeting. And so I recommend that we do a little GoFundMe right here, and our listeners can support us to get a llama, and we will go live recording with a llama in the back, and we'll have a llama guest on the podcast.
That'd be great. Yeah, you know, maybe we should do a Facebook Live recording of the podcast one time. You know, just
I think we should, but I think we should also include a llama in that process.
Yeah, I would agree. Just a llama just chilling, just hanging out, you know.
It's the best kind of llama. I don't want an angry llama. It's going to, like, spit at me and stuff.
This is a farm trying to generate some more money so you can have a llama join your Zoom meeting. Would you, in a staff meeting, would you want a llama there? You know, we have, this is, you know, a little more less formal than, you know, a staff meeting or a church council. You know.
I feel like that would be, like, a great prank to play, maybe you could get the place to, like, join as you with the llama, so, like, it just like it says your name, but it's just like a llama wandering around in the farm. Like, I think that'd be fun, and so
that would be fun
like that. Yeah, I don't
that'd
know.
Be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'd be a fun little. Had we not already missed April Fools in the midst of all the craziness, that would be a fun little April Fools Zoom joke to play.
Okay, that would be good. Yeah, I can see it. I'd love a llama to join us here. You know, what's sad is my cats have been making appearances on Zoom meetings for free.
Yeah,
you know, like, I need to be charging money for this.
I know. Who knew?
And Timmy, he's made some appearances in a lot of my Zoom meetings. He comes by, says hello, grabs my headphones off my head, pokes me in the eye, and then disappears. So
you could absolutely
back to mama.
I mean, I don't want to exploit your child, but you could absolutely charge for that. People would pay good money to have a cute baby like Timmy appear in their Zoom meeting.
There you go. We have a baby Timmy, baby Will. You know, we have a lot of packages available for people.
Right. Yeah.
You know, Sophia can come and talk to them.
Sure. Sophia is quite the Zoom meeting extraordinaire. It's really adorable. She has these little weekly calls with their preschool class because they're figuring out how to, you know, do preschool remotely. And so the kids don't understand.
I bet that's bananas.
It is, right. You know, a bunch of 3.5 and 4-year-olds. But so they don't understand what mute is, right? So like you say, like nobody can hear you. And so they just start talking louder. So Sophia will be like screaming at the computer trying to get her friends to hear. And she's on mute the entire time. It's pretty great.
Yeah. You know, I've been in plenty of meetings with adults. So that's a similar problem.
No argument. That's...
All right, we're going to get to our main story here. All right, I'm going to give you a headline.
All right, I'm ready for it.
From the New York Times.
Ooh, all right. Going all right. East Coast.
East Coast. And this this is an opinion headline, so it's not necessarily something we share an opinion, but I think it will lead us into our conversation that we kind of had a little bit before coming on the podcast. All right, this is New York Times by Catherine Stewart. The headline reads, "The religious right's hostility to science is crippling our coronavirus response."
The religious right's, say it again.
Hostility to science.
Hostility to science. Okay. Yeah.
Is crippling our coronavirus response. Now, one of the things that you and I have been talking about is we have seen our brothers and sisters in Christ.
Yep.
Their response to coronavirus is vastly different than our response to the coronavirus. Let's just say
that. Yeah.
We see churches out there that are still running Sunday morning services that are encouraging their flocks to come in for worship, that their response to kind of mandates to self-isolate or to self-quarantine have been met with hostility from Christians.
Yeah.
I did see an article that a pastor who said it was a fraud and continued to open churches recently died of coronavirus. So, I mean, like...
Right, which is tragic. We don't want to make light of that, but...
I don't wish anybody to die.
Yeah.
You know, but it is, you know, from a distance of not knowing this person in any real way, kind of like ironic or poetic justice in a sense, you know, like that's kind of, you know, you're reaping what you're sowing a little bit. So one of the things I wanted to get into before maybe we look at some of the things in this article is why are churches doing this? Because there's only really two demographics that I saw like blatant disregard for self-quarantine. That was Christian churches and college spring breakers. Like, those are the two demographics that are like, we're not interested in this.
Basically, the only two times those two groups have ever agreed on anything. Right.
Yeah. So what do you think? Why are churches and Christians doing this?
Well, you know, there is an element. If we want to take Luther's understanding of the Eighth Commandment, right, which says that we have to think the best of our neighbor and we have to assume that they have the best of intentions at all times. So if that's what we're trying to do, there is an element of faith that says there is nothing in this world that can harm us, and God is bigger than any virus, any illness, any whatever. And so the most important thing that we can ever do is to continue to worship God in the face of trial, in the face of hardship, in the face of illness. The most important thing we can do is continue to express our faith in God. And for many people, that means through worship. And I think that is you can reasonably come to that conclusion. And I would encourage people to come to that conclusion at many different points. In this particular notion, and I think we'll get into some of this, I don't think that's the appropriate way to understand how faith calls us to respond to a crisis like this, right? But I can say, when I have people coming to me in dark times, I want to point them back to God too, right? When they're facing trials and things, I want to point them back to God. And so if we're thinking the best of them, I think there is an element that says this is what Scripture tells us to do, is to rely on God in all things.
I certainly understand that. And I also think... you know, it's also an expression of like the innate desires of what we really, really want right now is to fall into our communities. We want to be around people that support, love us, and we can join together, especially in a worship setting. So I definitely get the desire to join together in worship right now. I get it. I there's nothing, you know, that I think many of us listeners, us on staff, would love more than to be able to really be together, whether in worship, in community, in fellowship, to in celebration of these things. So I understand there's a huge desire for people to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like, you know, people are like, I guess I gotta go, you know, out of sheer obligation. Right. I know people want to do this. So I definitely see, so we have like, during these dark times, we want to turn to God in worship, and there's a desire to be around one another in community. So I get those structures would make it very easy to say, hey, this is why we want to hold church in the midst of a kind of pandemic. Mm-hmm. So are there any other reasons, you know, let's say the positive reasons why people would want to get together from this something? Do you have any other thoughts on that?
You know, this probably is along the same vein, but I'm thinking along, you know, we either want you to be hot or cold, but don't be lukewarm, right? And so, you know, if you're going to be on fire for Jesus, you're going to keep showing up no matter what. And so there's probably an element, too, of like, well, now the true faithful are showing up. And all those weekend warriors, so to speak, who come in and then don't do anything with Jesus the rest of the week or whatever, you know, they're being weeded out. They're being separated, wheat from chaff. They're being, you know, divided sheep from goats, all of which are inappropriate interpretations of those scriptures. I want to admit that, but I think those are probably ways that it's being phrased. And so now we're seeing who's truly faithful, right? The faithful, the faithful remnant is now being gathered together for God's protection, for God's mercy, however we might think about that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think too, attached to that is like, we know as church workers and kind of as a community here, as a world, as the United States, we kind of know that Christianity does not have the same level of influence, prestige, and adherence that it did in the past. We know it's on a downswing. How far that swing will go is a bit of a mystery. But there is this idea of like, well, we can't really, I'm sure many pastors and churchers out there like, what happens if we're on a break for 6 weeks, 2 months, 3 months? Then we're finally able to come back together, and people just kind of got used to not going to church, and they just kind of got used to just not having that be a part of their daily schedule. And now it's harder to get them back into that daily schedule. So I understand hey, we need to keep kind of the things we do keep going, mm-hmm. you know, to have that routine keep going, or we're going to risk losing maybe part of our membership, part of our flock, part of our influence, like that's a potential on the table. So I can see like that as being like, that's a scary thing for churches to look at of like, well, we don't want to have our members not come back to us, so we better just keep going. And so I think these are, and I don't necessarily think it's a bad reason, but I do think meeting during this time is bad.
Right.
And so like,
and I do think that one in particular is flawed, right? I think that one has this flawed understanding of, well, we have to be physically in this space for God to be present with us. And that's just a gross misunderstanding, I feel, of what the story is that Jesus tells us in Scripture, where, you know, not only wherever two or three are gathered, but, you know, time and time again, God is showing up where God does, where we don't expect God to be able to go, or where we don't expect to see God.
You bet.
And so why would we think that we somehow now have the control over, well, God is here in this place, versus God is still with us in our homes. And so how do we, I hear what you're saying. I just think that one in particular has more flaws to it than some of the others.
I'm not saying it's a perfect thing. I think it is a rationale that gets people to think, I should meet here. And I we live in year 2020. There are amazing technological advancements we have to provide the similar resources than what we could do in person. We can't say the same. Like, it's not the same. But it can be a similar, way to worship or way to join together in community. It's just not quite the same.
Mm-hmm.
So we can acknowledge that. A Zoom meeting is not the same as face-to-face. Online worship is not the same as important, but we can provide that for a season to weather the storm. And I think that that's okay.
Yep.
But I think attached to this, there's also probably it's not, I don't think, maybe, you know, without trying to be as gentle, as least judgmental as possible, I don't think those are the only reasons churches desire to meet during this time. I think there are other reasons, whether churches or Christians or pastors would acknowledge them or not, are driving this,
sure,
this resistance to kind of self-quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do you think could be an underlying current attached to that?
So I think there are two ways to come at one of them. I think in the best light, the underlying current could be fear of financial security. In the worst light of that, it's just straight up greed, right?
Yeah.
And saying, we need to keep the doors open to keep the money flowing. Kind of rhymed. I like that. Anyway.
Sure.
So I think that's a big one for a lot of pastors. I mean, let's be honest. It's a legitimate concern to have financial concerns about the welfare of your congregation, especially if you're a pastor with a staff or with a child care center or anything. Like, that's a very real concern that that we experience. What are we risking for that? And, you know, for some pastors, I think there is, whether they'd identify this or not, you know, I think there's an element of straight up greed. As long as I'm here, I'm going to keep getting paid. And that sounds harsh. And I've not had conversations with these people directly, so I don't want to just be accusing them. It's just what I'm seeing, what I'm reading. That's how I perceive it. I perceive it in that manner.
I would agree, especially parts of the Christians out there that are pushing for, like, still meeting, still giving during this time. Our televangelists are, you know, people that are, I would say, a plague on Christianity.
Ooh.
You know, like, that are, you know, or at least what they're doing is a plague on Christianity.
Uh-huh.
And things that are just really, really difficult for me to stomach. So, like, whether every church has an aspect of greed in it, some churches, I do think, greed is attached there.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know if they would see it as clearly as those things. Most of the times, these hidden undercurrents of sin that are existed, myself and you and all our listeners, we're blind to.
Right.
And so they might not know that that exists.
Right. But it's okay, because you and I are here to point it out for them. So
yeah. Thankfully, you send this to all the churches.
Problem solved.
They're still remaining open.
Yeah.
So I think that it could be part of it. I think another part of it that you and I kind of mentioned before is an aspect of, well, ego, pride,
sure,
is attached to this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think, can be easy to confuse, of like, we want to remain faithful, you know, like, there's faith over fear. We're not afraid of the coronavirus. We're not afraid of getting sick because we trust our God. But I think even attached to that, there can be an element of pride within that are weaving through this narrative of why we should stay open, why we should resist self-quarantine. Do you see that as kind of like how things that can kind of infect the thinking of this time?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, when we, all the research that we're seeing that comes out, and we're going to get into how the evangelical community has seen science as part of the problem, so that might not help this particular argument. But from my perspective, all the research that we're coming out is showing the transmittability of the coronavirus is one of the major concerns, right? So, you know, for me, I'm not afraid of getting sick, right? Like, I'm
sure,
I'm confident that if I got sick and or if I died, I would be taken care of, right? I'm confident that my family would be taken care of. I agree. I don't fear those things, but it is prideful for me to think, because I don't fear those things, I can put my neighbors at risk.
Sure.
That's where I'm putting my own self before someone else, and that's where we get pride into this. And that's the whole purpose of the social distancing and of the stay-at-home orders, is to prevent the spread. It's not to keep you individual from getting sick. It's to keep you individual from getting 10 other people sick. And that's where I see pride coming into this, is because you're basically saying, oh, well, I'm not afraid of this, so I can do whatever I want, which is just ridiculous. That's like saying, I'm not afraid of driving 130 miles an hour, so I can do that down the highway.
Sure.
You're putting everybody else on there at risk. It's just ego and pride to let yourself think that you can do that without jeopardizing anything.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, there have been cases now of churches that have met, that their members have gotten sick, their members have died, because of that, of like, we were not afraid because we trusted God. Then this happens. And now they're left thinking, what do we do now? How do you go to, you know, how do you go to the spouse of somebody who died from coronavirus that got it at your church when you said, come to church because we're not afraid? And now those kids are growing up without a dad. You know, like, that is a powerful thing to think of, like, we did this. You know, this was a thing, an act of choice, and now they're feeling real repercussions of these things. And not only repercussions within the faith community, like you mentioned, but every person that the faith community then goes out right. and yep. interacts with. Mm-hmm. So it's not just this idea of, like, we are at home, in church, and it only affects us, and whatever happens to us, we're trusting that God will take care of us. But it's every other person, every person that did not want this, you know, that unbeliever or believer, this potentially could affect. And mm-hmm. so, you know, the virus does not care about your religion when it goes into the air.
Yeah.
Those are not a thing. And so I do think that that aspect there is present. And then finally, I think you kind of already are, at least for me, finally, maybe we'll come up with some others here. One of the things you mentioned is kind of this hostility towards science and experts.
Yeah.
And I think this is very, very interesting, especially because reading about it and looking at it, I don't have this hostility.
Yeah.
I do not share in this, but it's undeniable that parts of Christianity do.
Mm-hmm. And throughout history, right? I mean,
yes.
You know, was it Aristotle that the church tried to... No, not Aristotle. It was
Galileo.
That's it. Galileo that the church shut down because they said that the earth revolved around the sun and not the other way around. Like, you know, yes. Throughout history, Christianity and religion have been skeptical of science.
Yes. Yeah, and I think, you know, if you're part of a more fundamentalist branch of Christianity and you're now 60 or 70 years old, and from the moment you were born and you were in church, you were told that kind of like science or the experts are the enemy, you know, whether that's your science teacher teaching about evolution, mm-hmm. whether that's experts telling you that you shouldn't, that spanking your child actually does more harm than good, and you didn't want to hear that because you were trusting what scripture says about, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, whether that's science saying, hey, these historical events that are presented in scripture, we don't really have data to back that up. We can't say they're true. And now you're 7 years old and your whole life, all you've thought was, these experts are the bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, they're telling me my faith is wrong. And I don't share that, so I can't fully identify that. But if that's what you perceived, and now they're saying... And now you're hearing from other experts, other scientific experts, hey, this quarantine is this coronavirus is bad. You need to stay at home in quarantine. And I think it'd be easy to say, whatever.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're talking about, especially when it matters of faith. And that's what going to church is. It's a matter of faith, not science.
Right.
So I think it'd be very easy to be completely dismissive of this, of experts and science during this time.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this is also not a uniquely American problem, but a particularly American problem, too, with a natural... inclination of, you know, America was built on throwing off a yoke of oppression, right? And so
yeah.
in our culture as Americans, we have this idea of nobody can tell me what to do. And, you know, we still see that all the time in the way that we respond to government and respond to government orders or whatever. And so there's a piece of that that comes from our faith. There's a piece of that that comes from our culture. And there's a really nasty piece of it that has mixed those two together. And by nasty, I mean it's just an ugly mix. You know, it's nothing against the people. It's nothing against that particular way of thinking. It's just those two are not intended to mix and never should have been intended to mix. And it gets really messy really fast when they do.
Yeah, undeniable that American... We a part of our culture is built on this idea of individualism, of my person, nobody can tell me, nobody can limit me, I can rise to the level of my own ingenuity and stick-to-itiveness and hardworkiness, I can rise to whatever I can do. And that's part of I think, that can be a really, really good thing in a lot of situations. In this one, now that it's like, hey, instead of seeking out your own individual needs, you need to be looking at the greater needs of the community around you, including community you might not even know or interact with, then that becomes hard to reconcile those two things, right? Of like, nobody can tell me what to do, and yet I should stay at home for the sake of others. These are two things coming into conflict within our own, you know, hearts and minds. And I think other parts of the world that do not have that individualistic parts of their culture, it might be easier to say, for the good of the community, I'll just stay at home because that's part of it. I mean, you think of, like, even though we all know supply trains are running, the groceries are still getting food, they're still getting stuff, and yet we're still hoarding.
Yeah,
like, people out in our world are still buying everything they can out of fear that they won't get it. Because what matters is they get it.
Yeah.
Not that we all get it. Not that my community has toilet paper. It's that I have toilet paper. My family has toilet paper. And so it's very individualistic thinking of, I got to get mine and protect mine. And that's all that matters.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We were having a small conversation on our Facebook group, our Lord of Life Facebook group. Pastor Gary's been doing some morning conversations, and someone commented that on there about faith, and I don't want to share their name here because this is not my story to share necessarily, but they're talking about their family in another country where shortages are a regular way of life. And in that regular way of life, you know, it's not uncommon to have to spend 4 or 5 or 6 hours going from store to store to store because someone said there might be chicken somewhere, right? And that you're actually able to get that. And so you wait and you stand in the line and you wait and you hope, and then it doesn't happen, so you walk somewhere else. And you know, this is a very new concept for people in the United States, and new for our generation of people in the United States, right? I mean, the United States has gone through this before. You know, we did rationing back during World War One and World War Two. You know, there have been these experiences in people's history, but this is new for us. You know, for you are in my generation, and for the most part, for our parents' generation, right? We grew up in a land of plenty. We grew up not ever being short on anything that we desired, and having the financial resources for many people, right? When this is when the middle class started to boom, and so many people just had the financial resources to be able to get whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted. And so it's not a universal experience, but for many people, all of a sudden we're thrust into a world of scarcity or potential scarcity, and we fear the unknown because we don't know how to live like that. And we've been trusting our pocketbooks rather than trusting our community. That can be a scary place to be.
Especially when, you know, again, parts of our culture are not only driven by this individualism, but by consumerism.
Yeah.
You know, by, like, who I are, our cultural identity, my individual identity is driven by what I'm purchasing and buying. And from the moment I'm born, everything I'm consuming, from my television, my newspaper, my movies, my music, has been engineered to convince me that purchasing X will make me happy, better, fulfilled. And now that is threatened.
Yeah.
And so now I'm thinking, okay, this God of mine has been threatened. I've got to get what I can right now out of fear. And so I think that this is part of that. So I think this does go back to this idea of, like, well, why are Christians rebelling against this idea? And I think this is coming from this, all this stuff is mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one thing. It's all this mixed together that all of us have. Now, some of us have different levels of this to different degrees, but by being a nature of being an American, I can say I'm influenced by consumerism. I'm influenced by individualism, and I'm certainly influenced by pride, greed, fear. All those things are going on inside me every day. And so I get difficult to say, how can we now trust that by me staying home and letting other people do their thing, this is going to work out okay?
Yeah.
Because that is scary, because now I've got to trust people I've never met. And if you're grown up in a more fundamentalist background, people you don't naturally trust that they're going to fix a problem when you don't think they can, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah. There's one other piece that I think is occurring to me that is probably kind of wrapped up in all the things that we've addressed, but I think it's worth hitting on, and because we've touched on it in the podcast before, is this perception of Christian persecution in the United States.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so if I as a Christian perceive myself as having been persecuted, then someone telling me to stay home and not worship is just more evidence that I'm being persecuted. I think that's just another piece. You know, it's the fear, it's the pride, it's all the stuff that we've talked about already wrapped up into that. But I think it's another piece for us to throw into the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and we've addressed that on a previous podcast, but that is 100%, I think, part of this as well. That's leading to that nobody can tell me what to do.
Right.
Nobody can tell me I can't worship my God how I want to worship
right.
my God.
Yep.
You know, and by them saying that, that is an affront to my faith.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's saying you can't worship your God. They're just saying, don't go to church for a couple weeks because of this pandemic. Now,
I mean, we are still, let's just be clear, we at Lord of Life are still worshiping our God.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
We're still doing it in a very authentically Lutheran manner, right? I mean, it looks radically different, but we're still very much able to worship God. No one's coming in and shutting down Lord of Life and preventing us from broadcasting our services every week. Mm-hmm. That would be Christian persecution and Christian oppression.
Sure.
You know, asking us to stay home for the good of our neighbor is not persecution.
Even though I personally don't think that this is a situation where Christians need to rise up against the government or social pressure to stay home, I don't see that. But I do think there are situations where Christians should.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get into this point of like Christians should always just respect the experts, always respect the government authority, always respect societal pressure. That's not the case. There are situations where Christians should worship, even if it means harm might befall them.
Yes.
And we think of our Christian brothers and sisters in China right now, who, having crosses removed, puts up pictures of the whoever their governmental leader right now, I'm drawing a blank, instead of in their churches, saying this is what you should be worshiping. That's real persecution, and they should. I think should is a really word, but it would not be a problem for me if churches over there defy those things, even if it means they face negative consequences.
Sure.
I think that that is something that should be celebrated for them, and say I respect that, even if I don't experience here in America. I do think that that is a well thought out and reasonable place to go in light of what it means to be a Christian in your nation.
Mm-hmm.
And history is littered with Christians who have stood up to governments or societal pressures, potentially been martyred for it, and I think made the right decision.
Yeah.
You know, or made a decision that gave glory and honor to God and was living out their faith in a reasonable way. But the difference between those things is they're doing those things, they can acknowledge it, it's only going to affect them. And it's not, again, asking to stay home for a few weeks for this is not the government threatening our lives based on our faith. These are completely two different things. These are not equivalents.
Right. The government is not saying, hey, all you Christians, you're the reason that the coronavirus is spreading, so you have to stay home and you're not allowed to. No, the government is saying everybody everywhere should be staying home to help keep everybody safe. And so Christians, Muslims, Jews, people who don't have faith at all, you should all be staying home to prevent this thing from spreading, to try to protect one another. It would be a very different story if the United States came down and said, all right, anybody who is a Lutheran, you all are the center of this coronavirus, and so you Lutherans, you're not allowed to practice worship anymore for the next 6 weeks. Everybody else, you keep having church, go ahead. But Lutherans, that's a very different story. And that is not what we are experiencing right now. The stay-at-home order is not based on our religious faith. It is not directly an affront to our religious faith. Is it a challenge to our faith? Absolutely.
Yes.
It's absolutely a way that in which our faith can be challenged. It is absolutely a way in which our faith can be tried and tested. Maybe may or not be the right word, but it is absolutely something that we have to wrestle with as a community to figure out how we're going to go forward. But it is not in order to not worship. It is not in order to say that you, because of your faith, are not allowed to be together. It is a broader brush than that. And I really appreciate what you were saying, Patrick, that there are places where it's appropriate, and we should recognize and honor and pray for those places, and we should stop pretending to be that place. Because when we pretend to be that place, we are we're doing dishonor to those places in which people are genuinely suffering hardship on behalf of the gospel of Jesus Christ when we feign that persecution here.
Yeah, I 100%. I'm with you. Yeah, I am. I think this is interesting. I'm not sure what. And I think what is difficult about this is if churches continue to defy the government or defy their state or city ordinances, I think they're going to find they're going to get what they deserve. They're going to have a self-fulfilling prophecy here of like, we defied this for so long, and then now the cities and state governments are going to have to say, and now you can't meet. And then they're going to cry persecution over this. So they were asked to stay at home. They would not. And then now they're going to get kind of like, again, they're going to get what they're going to reap what they've sowed. And they're going to still, I hope it does not lead to a further entrenchment in these things. Like a further of, I'm persecuted, a further greed, a further pride, a further resistance to experts, or a further resistance to science in this area. But I'm afraid that that could be where it goes, right? Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. that it could end up there. So do you have a solution for us, Pastor David? Do you know how to fix this problem?
Oh, just pray harder, Patrick. You know, that's this.
There you go. Boom.
You know, it's interesting. Before we get to a solution, you know, there's one other piece that I think is contributing to this, right? I don't know what your day-to-day has been like. You know, I've had to go to the grocery store a couple of times in the past couple of weeks. I've had to be out doing, you know, pastorally things. Yeah. And one of the things I noticed that I think makes it difficult for Christians in particular to understand, not Christians, people of faith in particular, to understand why we can't meet the way we want to meet. You know, you go past Home Depot and the parking lot is full. You go past a Target or a Walmart or wherever, and the parking lots are all full. And so you have to ask yourself, well, what is essential about going to Home Depot? And you know, I'm guilty of this too, right? I put on my mask and went out to Home Depot to get a couple of plants for my 4-year-old to plant in our little garden because we've been home for 4.5 weeks and I'm running out of things to do at the house. And there's a limit to the number of walks I can take her on a single day. So, you know, I get it and I'm guilty of this, but, you know, people see that and they say, well, if Home Depot can figure it out, if the government can say that these places can be open, why on earth can't the church figure this out? Yeah. And there's an element of that that I understand, right? I mean, I see
sure,
that.
Absolutely.
And I would much rather have people here in the church on a regular basis than have people at Home Depot. No offense to Home Depot. Sorry for picking on you, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd much rather be able to gather with people here. There's just not at this point a way that we feel like we can do that safely. Mm-hmm. You know, when people see this at Home Depot, they have to understand that's considered an essential service by somebody who deemed it essential. But that does not mean it is safe for people to be there. That does not mean that it is not a possibility for the virus to be spread through people who are there. So as a congregation and as individual churches, I would encourage us to think of ourselves not just as following an order, but as promoting safety and well-being for ourselves and for our neighbors and our community.
Absolutely.
And maybe that gets
maybe
that gets us into the solution a little bit, right? Is to reframe how we're viewing this whole thing, right? Because there's nothing that we can do as well. If you're a scientist that's into viral epidemiology and whatever, then there's probably things that you can do. As a pastor, there's nothing I can do to stop this, to stop coronavirus. All right. There's no amount of prayer that is going to fix this. I'm certainly going to continue to lift it up, but prayer alone is not going to be the thing that fixes it. There's no sermon I can preach that's going to do it. There's no number of times I can serve communion that's going to do it. But what I can do is to reframe how I view this. And do I view this as, well, this is inconvenient for my faith? Or do I view this as this is an opportunity for me to love my neighbor? And neighbors I will never meet, right? By staying home, I am loving and protecting people I will never, ever encounter. And that's a powerful witness as well. You know, we just completed Easter and Holy Week on a Monday, Thursday. We talked about that story of Jesus washing his disciples' feet and telling them to go and love one another. Just, you know, do the same thing that I've just done for you. What greater sign of love can we show for people than to say, I am willing to sacrifice my way of life so that you can be safe and well.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a powerful statement of love, if ever I've heard one. Also, you just got a little replay of my Maundy Thursday sermon there. Sorry.
There you go. Yeah. No, I'm 100% on board with you, and I did like that sermon. So I'm with you, and I think part of that is like Home Depot, Target, Walmart, the grocery stores, they don't have a mandate by God to serve and love their communities. The church does.
Yeah. You know, they have a mandate by their shareholders to turn a profit. And the church does not have that. Right. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So we, more than anyone, should be leading the charge of like, how can we love and support our community right now?
Yes.
What is the most loving thing we can do? And I'm sure even in the midst of that, churches may land on, we will stay open is the most loving thing we can do. I disagree, but
at least they're asking the right question.
At least that is the right question. Yeah. I would agree. At least that is saying like, that is a part of how we should do that. All right. Where can you find us?
Oh, we're just stopping there. All right, cut it off.
I think that's a good place. Yeah, I think that's a good
usually
place.
We have like a little wrap up or something. Like that's all right.
Okay. All right. No. I thought that was, I feel like that was
right. Okay, we wrapped it up. And put a bow on
There's a bow on it.
Excellent. All right. So hey, if you liked what you heard today, you can, as always, find us on our website, www.beyondsundaypodcast.com, where you can find all of our episodes for your quarantine binging. You can, of course, find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. Look us up on the Facebook. You know, we're probably going to be trying to go do some live stuff, so who knows what that might look like. We probably will not drop a live episode at 5 a.m. on Monday morning, though apparently Patrick's up at 5 a.m. on Mondays, so
I'm good to go.
So, who knows?
Timmy and I will drop one.
Who knows?
He's not a very good conversationalist right now, so
that's all right. You can win that debate, it'll be fun. But you can find us in all those places. As always, share us with your friends, neighbors, whoever it is that you think is stuck at home and needs something else to listen to for a little while. We would love to support you and to be with you during this time of isolation and, you know, being apart together. Together apart? Which way am I supposed to say that? I don't know.
No, I got you. Yeah. All right. But we'll be back next Monday with more Beyond Sunday. And, look to our Facebook for maybe some live stuff coming up. Maybe next week we'll do a live episode.
Who knows?
We'll see.
Possibilities are endless.
Yeah, they truly are.
Except for us being in the same room. That's not a possibility.
Probably not. So it's not going to happen in the near future. All right. Have a great week, everybody.